Hi, everybody. Tito here. Just wanted to let you know that while we do a review of the deck Wheel Lock, that was before we even knew about the nerfs, and the nerfs are already out. So the deck review is probably mostly irrelevant, except for theoretics. So just kind of keep that in mind as you're listening. It's still a fun episode. Hope you enjoy.
Back to Bread and Butter, everybody. We're serving out the basics or Hearthstone improvement, and today is episode nice. As always, I'm joined by my co-host Tito, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic, Doc. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty great. And as fairly often, we have our amazing ever-returning guest, Dawn, aka Dragon Rider. How are you doing today?
Hello, I'm doing well. I did not realize this was the nice episode, but that's exciting.
Yeah, I thought everyone was going to say they're doing nice.
Yeah, doing nice, yeah.
Hopefully we can err on the side of the squelch version of the nice episode and not the blizzlet version of the nice episode, but anyway.
Yes.
So, Doc, what have you been doing inside of Hearthstone?
So it's just been BGs mainly, because Duos is out. Been enjoying trying to play duos, but I've still only soloed Q duos since it's been officially launched, which has been very up and down. I will say about half the time I play by myself because my teammate leaves. But I mean, I have still managed to win combats by myself. Granted, I don't win the lobby, but I mean, still winning a couple combats when you're just one board versus two always feels good. And then I've dabbled in standard a little bit, but just BGs is where it's at for me. How about yourself, Tito?
Sure.
I'm rusty.
No, it's all good. As long as you throw somebody, it works. So everybody, the long national nightmare is finally over. I finally hit legend in April. It's been a struggle, and it's been weird because this month I said this is going to be try hard month, so I'm not playing silly paladin dancing decks. I'm not doing things like that. I was playing like good tier one, tier two decks. And it started off really strong, and then I had struggled, and I finally hit last night. But then I looked at my stats, and it wasn't, I didn't play poorly. I had a 51 winning percentage on the climb. So I went 255 and 214. So that wasn't bad. And then finally, with the deck that we're going to be talking about in a little bit, Wheel Lock, I was 102 and 83. So it feels really bad when you're climbing and you're not getting it. But if you're going to get there, as long as you're winning one more game than you lose, right? Or slightly more than you win, you lose. So don't panic when that happens. Like, it's hard to not feel good about that when you are struggling. But if you look at the statistics, it may not be as bad as you think. Yeah, stringing the wins together. Also, got my first win of the THL season, which, big monkey off the back. It's week 3, so, you know, first two losses, didn't want to do that. I'm apparently going to be the team's number 1-2 seed, because our team hasn't been doing all that amazing. I was almost the number 1 seed, but Pilot took the fifth game, his series, on Saturday, so that would have been really funny, because I was going to be like, yeah, I'll be the number 1 seed this week. And then I put the pressure on them, like, King Viking and Pilot, they'll win. That won't be a problem. And then King Viking, unfortunately, fell in battle, and then Pilot went 5 games. So, you know, and I'm in IKEA on Saturday, and so I get the notifications from Discord right to my iPhone. So, like, every few minutes, I'm getting the notification, like, won game 1, lost game 2, you know, so that was a lot of fun. As far as duos, on stream, we did a couple games of duos with Pilot, and we, you know, had fun. I think we did fairly well overall. And it's funny, as I say Pilot, he popped up on Hearthstone right there. The battle.net just let me know he started playing. So I wonder if his ears are burning. But Dawn, what have you been doing inside of Hearthstone?
Well, feeling ashamed because I haven't played a single game of duos yet. Which, like, what am I doing with my life if I'm not playing duos when I wanted to? But I'm playing standard, so that's good. I also hit legend. Feels like very late in the month for me, but that's also because, like, I wasn't playing, so I don't know if I should share my stats or not.
That's up to you. Entirely up to you.
I played less games than you did with just one deck.
That's okay. Sorry. No. I play a lot. Like, I play a lot. I stream almost every night. You know, I'm having, like, volume is almost my middle name, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think over the last, like, year and a half or 2 years, I've also, it's been more consistent for me to hit Legend in fewer games. So even if I don't, you know, sometimes I might hit it day, like, 7, day 10, I don't know, end of the month. It just depends on, like, what else is going on, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute when we get to what we've been doing, like, outside of the game. Still kind of game-related, but, yeah, just wasn't playing my own games a lot. So finally was like, okay, I need to, like, actually play and just I want to hit a Legend, whether, you know, it's pushing super hard or I don't care what rank I am after that, like, I just need to get it for the star bonus, at least for next month. And then maybe I can go hard if I want to. But yeah, I am a little sad, though, that I haven't gone to try duos, but been focused on a lot of other stuff. So
speaking of a lot of other stuff, what have you been doing outside of the game of Hearthstone or semi-related to the game of Hearthstone?
Well, the semi-related thing would be that I just casted the recent Masters Tour, which was awesome. It was an absolute blast. Yeah. Doc's cheering. I love it. Yeah, but that was a blast. It was a lot of fun. It was a really, really good tournament. If anybody has heard me on Doctor 3 or... listen to our most recent episode of TCCG Roundtable. Definitely dived into that quite a bit on those podcasts. So if you want to hear even more about that, but yeah, it was, I don't know. It was just like a really fantastic tournament. I loved all the storylines for the players, and there was like a decent variety in the decks and some cool things there. So, and just some like really cool play. So it was really, it was a really cool tournament.
So two questions for you on that.
Yes.
What was your favorite match of the tournament?
Oh, that's so hard. Okay, so we talked kind of about this on Roundtable, and I was like, if I had to try to suggest like one or just a couple of games, like I don't know which one to pick because all of them, seriously, like especially the top eight, I would say, but there were so many matches throughout the weekend that like just could have been finals. It was so good.
I'll say my favorite while you're thinking of yours was, I think it was Bunny Hopper versus Insane, and Bunny Hopper ended up losing, but it was just such an interesting game because, Insane was playing, Zaremi Priest and, Bunny Hopper was playing Warrior, and he board locked, Insane, who had 7 minions, so he couldn't do anything. And instead of clearing anything, whatever, he just left it there and kept gaining like 15 armor each time because he didn't have the cards he needed. So it was really interesting. Unfortunately, I don't think Bunny got there, but it was a really fun game as far as watching people play in a way that you might not think to play. And I actually had a situation come up with like that for me in a game, and I was like, oh, I'm going to leave this guy board locked. Or that's something I've learned to do in certain situations. So, anyway, if you don't have an answer, that's fine.
Yeah. But. I don't know. I mean, I think if I had to pick, like, I would just say the match that I enjoyed casting the most was definitely the top four match between Habugabu and Pietnitsa, or AKA Friday, if you've heard it referred to as that as well. That was... It was like heartbreaking to see how it ended for Habu, but the whole series, it was just like so nutty, it felt like. But there were so many good plays and just both players like really trying to play to their outs, capitalizing on that, and just like seeing how, even though you can be up, you know, two games, doesn't mean that you're going to win the whole match. So I don't know. I think that was just a really exciting one. And in terms of like me casting it, I felt like I was really in my element for that match, especially. Like, I just feel like I did really well in that match in terms of casting. So
you did really well in just about anything I heard. I didn't watch the whole thing. In fact, I missed a good chunk of it. But when I saw you casting, you were doing fantastic. And one quick note on that match in particular is if you ever feel like your opponent does something and statistically, this is going to come up later, things they draw things statistically that you they shouldn't, or your stats are poorly, watch that last game with Habu Gabu, because he statistically had such horrible plague draws in that matchup that it was like Dawn said, heartbreaking was the right word for it. But anyway, I had one more question for you on casting before we move on to whatever else you've been doing outside of Hearthstone. How do you feel like, do you feel like you're now on the team? Because I know like for a while it was kind of like hit or miss there sometimes, like you'd get invited, not get invited. But you've been fairly consistent lately. Like, are you starting to feel like I'm here, I am part of this, like they're going to call me next time, or where are you at with that? And you don't have to answer that if you don't want to.
I mean, I don't know if I will get invited back again or not. I mean, I continue to hope that I will, right? But I feel like at least like, I guess for me personally, mentally, I'm in a much better space than I have been in terms of like feeling like I belong. I would say like, especially kind of the first time or two, I was like, I don't stack up to these other casters or these players. Like, I'm not good enough. I don't deserve to be here, and just being really hard on myself. But after this time, it's like, yeah, maybe I did mess up, but you know what? I'm getting a lot better at like, yeah, I'll call myself out on stream or like make fun of myself or whatever. And, also not opening the Twitch channel at all. That certainly helped.
Yeah, Twitch chat is a Reddit adjacent place, unfortunately.
And watch a baseball game, watch a basketball game, watch any real sports, and listen to the announcers. They're never perfect. So, you know, don't ever think that you have to be 100%, like, because things happen. And then they'd be like, I thought it was 2-2, but it was 2-3, and he walked. And, you know, things happen. So outside of casting, what have you been up to?
Also playing in a couple THL series. I know that's still kind of in game, but do with that. Also, it turns out after casting the top level players, my play has gotten better. So that's a good thing. That's felt nice. Then outside of that, been just kind of trying to work and do some other stuff. I feel like I'm behind on YouTube videos and other content, but also was kind of getting ready for the casting and stuff, preparing for that a lot. So kind of put other things aside. And then I am about on my final week of my first class for school. So
woohoo.
Yeah. So that's been good. So getting ready to, get into my next semester term, I guess, because they're only like 2 months long. It's only 8 weeks. So I can't really say semester because it's not like a typical, you know, there's not like two semesters. Like, it's every 2 months I'm starting a new class. Or new classes, because now I'm going to be doing two at a time instead of one.
All right, Doc. 9:31. Life outside of Hearthstone. Go.
So I've been pretty busy. Moving. Getting our stuff moved over to the new place. We should be in there sometime, hopefully early middle of next month. We don't really have a hard out of where we're at right now, so that makes the stressful part of moving a lot easier. Been playing a lot of Commander recently, like a lot, and I made a full deck this morning, and then I made about half a deck as well. And I have a jank deck ready to go. It's just been a lot of Magic, honestly. And this weekend, which is why I won't be on next week's episode, I'll be traveling down to southern Utah to visit my brother because he has his capstone screening. He would be graduating, but he changed his classes around, excuse me, to make room for working on the Kevin Costner movie Horizon 3. But because of things, Horizon 3 got delayed, which he didn't know until he had already moved his schedule around. And so that means he has to take some classes next year before he can graduate. So going down to southern Utah to see his capstone, my mom, my niece, and my sister are flying out as well. Excuse me. And it'll be the first time in 6 years that my brother and I, my sister, and my mom were all in one place together.
Wow.
So, yeah, pretty crazy. So it'll be fun to see everybody. Can't wait to see my niece again. It'll be the first time my niece has seen my brother and I together. She has seen us separately. She's seen us through FaceTime together. But in person's a little different. Like, she knows which one of us is which per se. My sister has this pillow that has a picture of the three of us on it from when we visited my sister in Seattle. And then my sister would be like, okay, go find Doc. And then my niece will run over there and put her hand on my face. And then my sister will tell her, hey, go find Ben. And then she'll run over there and put her hand on my brother's face. So she knows us, even though we're twins and she's never seen us physically together before. Lots of family stuff. Celebrated a birthday and Easter last week, which is why I wasn't on, or 2 weeks ago, sorry, which is why I wasn't on 2 weeks ago. Just been very busy, unfortunately, because that means I can't be here talking with everybody. But I'm glad I get to be back. And this is the Reader's Digest, believe it or not, version of what I've been up to the last couple weeks.
I totally feel that.
How about yourself, Tito?
Well, my kid turned 10 years old yesterday, so we had the birthday party at the trampoline park, which was a lot of fun for him and, you know, his friends. And then we took him and my grandson to see my parents on his birthday yesterday. He shares a birthday with, I believe, Hitler. So, you know, easy to remember for most people. Also, happy birthday to Leo Gonzalez.
I think there's another reason why his birthday is easy to remember, Tito.
Yes. And actually, so I was all told initially when he was born that he was born on Jerry Garcia's birthday, and that's why it was 420, but that apparently is a lie. So, but it made sense. It's a lie that, you know, it's easily believable. But happy birthday to Minty Fresh, whose birthday is today, I believe. So I know you're listening out there, Minty. Happy birthday.
Definitely.
So normally I don't splurge on myself. Like normally I bowled for however many years. I'm probably going to get back to bowling this year. I still haven't bought a new bowling ball. And mostly because they'll say, well, what do you want the bowling ball to do? And it's like, well, I just want to throw it and have it hit strikes. And, but like, you have to like understand, like, do you want to go out? You want to go in? But my style kind of shifts. So I never bought that bowling ball. And that's kind of like the way I am. It's like I have a hard time pulling the cord to get my own personal things. Last year I splurged on myself. I got the Stream Deck. I got a monitor arm. And I got the Focusrite for plugging my guitar into the computer. And that I bought those all within 3 months. And that was like, well, I can't believe I did that. But yesterday, when we went down to my parents' house, on the way back, we stopped at IKEA, and my wife was like, you've been wanting a standing desk for a while. There's one that's on sale for a good price, so why don't you get it? So we looked around, and we debated. There was another super nice one, and they had a nice top that was as is, but I would have had to have gotten it back that night, and that one to fit in the car. So we just went with the one that we saw that was on sale. It was a good price, and I'll have it delivered in the next few weeks. No rush. But so I actually bought a standing desk, which is something I've wanted for a long, long, long time. And good for your health. You know, good for, you know, I work and I stream and I'm at my desk all the time. So being able to stand for a couple hours is probably going to be really nice. So outside of that, and I think I'm going about as long as Doc normally goes, My son has been really back into Pokemon. Like, he's been collecting Pokemon, and he kind of went not out of it for a while, but he's been really hardcore into it now as far as collecting the cards. And I had bought him a battle. It was like a battle set, and it was like an instructional thing. And I thought it was just like, you know, basically trying to tell you the rules and stuff like that. But you actually set up the cards in a particular order based on they're numbered. And you have each of you has a book, and it says, you know, do this, do this, do this. Hey, you drew a card. Hey, look, it's Pikachu. And now tell your partner to play. And you do exactly what they say. And it really kind of helps teach you the game a little bit more, which I thought was really kind of nifty. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, I still think there's some rules. I mean, it's not as cut and dry as you think. But the basics are there. And I'm hoping to kind of, you know, learn and play with them and go from there.
I think, to piggyback on Pokemon, because I played Pokemon for a while. I think the hardest thing to learn / unlearn with either getting into or getting out of Pokemon is in Pokemon, attacking ends your turn. It's not like Magic or Hearthstone where you have agency before and after you declare attackers. In Pokemon, you make sure you do everything you possibly can because you don't get a response on your opponent's turn. That's not how Pokemon works. You do everything you can and then you attack and then turn's done. But I'm glad your son's getting into it. Yeah.
If a Pokemon has an ability and an attack, you can only choose one of them, right?
No, you can do the ability and then you can attack. If it's your Pokemon in your active Pokemon slot.
Yes.
I believe you can do the ability and then attack with it.
So,
but you can only, unless it states otherwise, you can only activate the ability once per turn.
Sure.
Sometimes once per game.
But now if I have 3 energy and the attack takes 3 energy and the ability takes 2 energy, do I have to math that or does it matter?
Well, so with Pokemon, you stack the energy on the Pokemon for the attacks, what ability are you talking about?
So there was one card
that costs energy.
No, there was one card. It was like use 2 energy, draw 2 cards or something like that.
Might be like discard 2 energy, draw 2 cards or something like that, because Pokemon does have a lot of fetching energy out of your discard pile to put back into your hand to then drop onto your Pokemon.
No, it just it basically was draw 2 cards and I had the 2 stars next to it or the 2 little. So I thought it was I wasn't sure if I had to math the energy and say, do I need 5 to do both or.
That might just mean you need just whatever energy to be able to activate that ability. Because Pokemon doesn't care if you have, some Pokemon do, but you can have over the attack limit requirement for energy. And it doesn't matter for most Pokemon. Some Pokemon do, and that like helps multiply whatever, but you have to have at least the required amount of energy on to do the attack or to do an ability like that. So you should be able to like have the 2 like normal energy, do the ability, and then attack if you have enough energy to do whatever attack you want to do.
All right, so final question. You can't use abilities on the bench Pokemon, right? Like, you can only use
abilities. You can. You absolutely can.
Yeah?
You
just can't attack with them. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some, like, decks that exclusively you set up, like, 1 or 2 Pokemon out to be your active, and then the rest of your Pokemon live on your bench, and then you do shenanigans from your bench, because there's only a very few specific things that can target your bench Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And so you can set up some big hitters, like big hitting abilities on your bench and just do that. Like one of my favorite decks, it was Giratina Garchomp. Sorry, everybody. Pokemon talk on Bread and Butter. It was a Giratina Garchomp with Ultra Necrozma deck. And I would have multiple Malamars on my bench. And it was, I forget what exactly they did. I think it was like being able to like draw cards and like attach energies for free. Something like that, and you just look like just activate the abilities and then load up your Pokemon you're going to swing with, and then you swing with it for big damage. Wow. Yeah, you absolutely can attack, you can absolutely activate abilities on bench Pokemon. Some Pokemon, their abilities can only be activated if they're on your bench.
All right, fair enough. Well, I think we learned a little something here.
I can breathe.
All I heard is that we need to have Doc on the TCCG roundtable to talk other card games.
I would love to.
Yes. We got him. All right. Perfect.
Very, very nice. Yeah. Well, if you want to fill 3 hours, you got Doc.
Yeah.
But speaking of...
Oh, that's easy for me.
Got it. Let's go. Okay.
But let's bring it back to Hearthstone. Just for a little while. We're still trying to get in that creator program, so we got to keep it over 70%. Sorry. Okay?
We got a lot to talk about today. So yes. Don't worry. We got a lot.
So... Today I want to talk to you about a very special deck to me, and it's called Wheelock. And why it's special to me is just because I've played it for the last, 200 games or something, and that's really the only reason. It's a deck that... So, Wheelock is a deck, it's a control Warlock deck, and it has an actual win condition, which the win condition is you play at the wheel. So, the real keys to the deck are you need to be able to have a turn where you play an 8-mana spell that doesn't really affect the board. I have an asterisk next to this because we'll get to that. You need to be able to survive long enough to get to that point, and then you need to be able to survive for 4 turns without having a deck because Wheel destroys your deck. Now, I said 4 turns. Wheel says 5 turns, but your turn counts. You only have to survive for 4 turns. And the other weird thing about it is even when it comes back to your turn and all you have to do is end turn to win, you have a whole turn. So that is like the ultimate setup for bad manners. So if you really want to, you had an opponent you really didn't like, you can really slow play that victory because all you have to do is hit end turn and you win. I don't recommend that. But, you know, if you have quests to finish and you want to get some things out there, it's a good opportunity. So... Wheel is a card that we thought it wasn't going to be anything more than tier fun. We looked at this and we were like, there's no way this is going to be a good card. It's going to be like, you know, some weird achievement, but it turned into a strong ladder deck. It's not a meta tyrant. It's not this oppressive force. It's not, you know, sharper DH. But it's, I would say it's a strong tier 2 option. It's about 53%. I think right now in the last 3 days at Legend, all throughout ladder is pretty good. Now, when you get to 1K Legend, which I know a lot of you 1K Legends are listening to this podcast, it does drop kind of down to a tier 3. And that's more, I believe, because the decks that are popular up there are a lot of natural counters to this deck, sort of like Nature Shaman. There's a lot of Nature Shaman in the top 1,000, and that just kind of rolls our deck. So I think that's it, but... Until you get to that 1K, it's a pretty solid choice. Your strongest matchups are pretty much all versions of Death Knight. At one point, I was 0-7 versus Death Knight, and then I figured out that I had to play differently. And then we ended up with a positive record against Death Knight, but we'll get to that too. It's good against pretty much all Druids, Paladins, Hunter, Warrior. It's good against Mining Rogue and Wishing Rogue. There are other rogues it's not good at. But in general, it's a pretty solid deck against all of those. You have positive win rate. Its weakest matchups are Zaremi Priest, which is unfortunate because Zaremi Priest is is probably the most prominent deck in the meta right now. So that might be a reason not to play Wheellock. But I haven't seen a ton of Zaremi Priest. I've seen enough of it, but not enough. And even though you're unfavored, it's a winnable matchup. You can still play to win that matchup. Nature Shaman... It's hard not to lose to Nature Shaman. There is, they just get to you. You are not fast enough to get there, and they just pretty much beat you from hand on turn 6. And that's just a feel bad matchup. Painlock and Sludgelock can also be very difficult. Also, Virus Rogue and Miracle Rogue are tough matchups, but you can win against those. We'll talk about that. So, for the key cards, this deck, honestly, it feels like it pretty much needs all its cards. Like, a lot of times you're like, well, these are the 3 cards you care about. I feel like all the cards in your deck are very valuable and make a big difference. There's not a lot of difference. Now, I saw, I've been playing a particular version of it that has the Anubishes and, I don't know what else would be different. I've seen some innovation on the deck, especially from, like, No Hands Gamer, where they're running, what's that card? That brings back a undead, I mean, it brings back a demon.
Your last demon that died?
Yeah, your last demon that died.
Yeah, end game.
End game. Yeah. So that's a card I've seen, and There's been a couple, I've seen them, people running Popgar in there for some quick heals. There's a couple of weird cards in there, but overall the deck feels very, very refined. Obviously Sargeras is huge. Phantanim. How do we say that? I just always call him Phantom.
I just say Phantom.
Okay. That's the 30, that's the 15-15 cost, one health less for your deck. That's, cost one mana less for each card in your deck. That's the one you always took off of Countess being really excited until you realize that he ended up actually costing more than zero because of his condition. Loken is very important in this matchup. Obviously, Wheel. Symphony of Sins is huge. Zilliax is really important. So there's a lot of really good decks. Really good cards that you want to care about. The thing about this deck that I find interesting is that depending on the matchup that you are facing, your game plan changes drastically. So I know this is called Wheel Lock, and you would think, I got to get to my wheel. There are times when you don't play Wheel, and you are not going to play Wheel. In fact, I played a game just before stream, which was against another Warlock, in which I fracking'd on three. Fracking, you look at the bottom three. You look at three cards, and then you pick one, the other two get discarded. Turn either two or three, I had Wheel Lock. I mean, I had Wheel in my fracking, and I chose to take something else. I believe I chose to take Table Flip because I was assuming that I was seeing a Pain Lock. So I would have rather had the clear because I'm never going to get to Wheel in that matchup. I ended up seeing some weird Wheel Sludge Lock, which was some kind of hybrid, which was okay. We won the matchup, but we were never going to play Wheel there. But when you're playing, let's talk about the cases when you do play Handlock, when you do play Wheel. And in those matchups, you're playing like a control deck. And this deck really feels like Handlock on some levels. You want to get your hand full. You want to play your big beefy taunts. You have Dark Alley Pack, which creates a taunt based on your hand size. So you got to remember, though, that it plays it after you play the card. So if you had 9 cards and you play Dark Alley Packs, you get an 8-8 because you have 8 cards left in your hand. Loken is really important because, I don't know, on turn 5 or turn 6, getting a 15-15 taunt and then hitting that with your location, pretty strong swing play. Doesn't always get you there, but it feels really good. And Doomkin is a huge huge swing turn in the game if you can play him. If you're not being pressured and it's turn 5 and you can coin out a Doomkin, you're slowing down their game plan and accelerating yours. So it is a huge power turn if you can get that. You don't want to do it to if you're going to die because you played this 6 mana 3/4 and they just, you know, kill you. But if you have an opportunity to play it, getting them to delay a turn or two to play Bran, not a bad thing, or whatnot. If you are playing control and you're sure your plan is to Wheel, the damage to their face is almost meaningless. Like, you want to keep their board clear. You want to make sure that they can't execute their plan. Now, I would say that's 90% of the time. Sometimes that chip damage comes in. If it ends up going down to the wire, you can't Wheel. You have to, you know, hit them. You need to get their armor down so that their sanitizers aren't as big or whatnot. Sometimes it matters, but for the most part, I wouldn't worry about going face, getting that damage in. I would worry about keeping their board clear. You also want to be gathering your resources where you can. You don't want to hoard your resources if you need them to survive, but you need something in your hand in order to Wheel. So in the other matchups, when you're playing aggro, like say Zoremi Priest or Hunt, believe it or not, we are favored in the Hunter matchup, which kind of surprised me. But in those matchups, you're not going to get these big minions. You're going to get your clears. Your plan there isn't to Wheel. Same thing with the Zoremi Priest, same thing with a couple of the aggregates. Your plan is not to Wheel. You don't care about Wheel. You need to run them out of stuff because you want to keep them off the board. If you're playing against Hunter, you want to be able to defile. You want to be able to table flip, mortal eradicate. You want to try to keep them off the board before they can play a big saddle up. And even if they do play a big saddle up, sometimes all you need to do after that is a, the table flip into a defile. Like, there's a lot of good options there that you have. So you want to be, in that case, mulliganing for all your removal, all your AoE type removal, even gift into, so gift's a very useful tool because a lot of times you're going to, on turn 9 or 10, gift and get a Twisting Nether and use that for stall. That's also a good stall once you get to your wheel turns. But sometimes you just need to play Siphon Soul, which is 4 mana, destroy a minion, gain 3 health. Sometimes that's a lot to get you through. So on aggro, don't even, it's an entirely different deck. Don't think about it. And Symphony of Sins is one of the cards that you usually try to hold on for wheel, but against aggro, you know, play it. Put a 6-6 with a 6-6 taunt with Reborn in front of their way. Six damage to all minions. That's going to clear their board. That's going to buy you time, as long as you're not almost dead. So there's a lot of good options here. So you have to kind of completely flip your mindset depending on the decks you're playing. And that's not necessarily easy to do when you're trying to learn a deck. Because when you're playing a deck, you're like, oh, I got to get to this turn. I got to do these. I got to do these things. It's almost like two different decks in this case. At least that's kind of what I've experienced. You want to have an idea what your opponent can do. And you don't want to get too greedy with your clears. You have enough different clears. You have, like we said, you have Defile, you have Table Flip, you have Mortal Eradication, you have Gift that has a couple different clears in it. You have Sargeras, you have Symphony of Sins, you have clears for days. So sometimes you want to hoard those clears and make sure you get the most value you can out of that. But if they have Sneaky Snakes and a couple other minions out there, play that Defile, keep their board clear, because that's going to really save you in the end, because hoarding your resources doesn't help if you're dead. You don't want, like I said, you don't want to wait for the saddle up. Also, you don't need to wait for a 9 mana, 10 mana Dark Alley pact in those matchups. Getting out a 6-6 taunt can be just fine. Like, sometimes we overvalue the value you get there, but if you watch the pros, they play cards. And if your best play right there is to play and get a 5-5 with taunt, and that's going to stop them for a turn, do it. Like, don't be afraid to play your cards. But let's talk about now, you're going to wheel, because you want to wheel. That's the whole point of the deck. You want to destroy your deck, you want to put them on that clock, and you want to win. That's the entire point of the deck, in theory, right? That's what the deck is for. So when do you wheel? You have to decide when you're going to wheel. And I would say that obviously it depends on how much you're being pressured by your opponent, knowing what their game plan is, understanding what they're going to try to do. If it's a control warrior, you know they want to get to their boom boss turns, unless they're playing Odin. But like they want to, you know, drag the game out, and you're just saying, no, we're not going to drag the game out. We're playing four more turns. Beat me or don't. And you got to have an idea of what cards you're going to play. So look at your hand. What do you have? If you just have table flips and mortal eradications, don't wheel. You need at least something to get you through those four turns. You need Sargeras on board or in your hand. You need to have Symphony of Sins to put cards back in your deck. You need to have Zilliath. You don't need to have all of these, but you have to look at your hand and evaluate, how am I going to survive four turns? Do I have the ability to survive four turns based on the deck we're playing? And if you feel like you do, or if you feel like you have no other choice, that's when you wheel. Now, when you do wheel, if you're 10 mana, make sure you tap first if you have room in your hand, because that's one more resource you're going to get that you're not going to have. I can't tell you how many times I wheel first because I'm excited to wheel, and I was like, crap, I didn't tap. So make sure you evaluate. Tap first as always. Unless, most of the time you want to tap first. I'm horrible at it. I don't take my own advice, but you need to think about that. You got to remember that the poofs all work differently, right? So Reno clears their whole board, you know, and that's a great stall, because not only do you clear their board for a turn, but also you limit what they can do the next turn. So having Reno in your hand is great. If you have Phantom in your hand, Phantotem, This is the asterisk of playing wheel is an 8-mana do nothing. In that case, you wheel, then you drop a 15-15 with lifesteal and taunt. And if you have a location already, then you copy it. That's not 8-mana do nothing. That's 8-mana, you know, swing the board, hopefully, and make it a little bit harder for them to get through and hopefully stall for at least a turn. So that's really good. And then you have Twisting Nether. You have to remember with Twisting Nether, which comes out of Gift, that it clears locations now too. And that includes your Sargeras portal. So if you are relying on the Sargeras portal to pop out 2/2s to block their items, you might want to think if you have a different plan there. If you want to, and then also you have Sargeras, which clears the board, but leaves the locations, which is good. Now, if you are playing something against for example, a warrior and they play Ziliax, their follow-up play to that is going to be to play Dr. Boom and bring those Ziliaxes back. So that's like 4 Ziliaxes. So in that case, you don't want to just, Twisting Nether, because that just keeps them in the pool. They die, right? So in that case, you want to use a poof, because then when they play Dr. Boom, they'll get a 6/5 from the excavate and be really sad. So keep that in mind as well. Like, you want to understand what your clears do and what they can bring back. You only have to live 4 turns. All right, I've been talking a while. I have a bit more to talk about this, but guys, have any thoughts on this before I finish it up on this?
I mean, I don't have anything like of super substance to add, other than this is making me want to try Wheel Lock, because I haven't played it yet. Like, that's one of the decks I haven't tried.
It's a fun deck. Yeah, I definitely agree with Tito. Like, it's not gonna be like something you can, you know, take into like top 100 legend, unless like maybe you are exactly No Hands Gamer who is playing it currently. But like, yeah, it's a fun deck if you don't care about your rank, or you know, if you're still like climbing, it's a good option. But it is a little weird to play. I do feel like personally, you can often win a lot of games by just creating big bodies on the board. So a lot of the games, you can just say, like Tito was mentioning, you know, hey, cool, I'm going to make like the 6/6. And yeah, it's not, you know, you don't have a full hand and you're not creating a, you know, this 8/8 or 9/9 body. But a 6/6, especially if you are playing that 2-mana end game that we brought up earlier that can just resummon the last demon that died, that's generally your only demon. So you know that you're going to get that back, even if it's like a couple turns later, for a lot of the lists. So it's pretty easy to say, especially in those like aggressive matchups, cool, I'm just going to put a big taunt here. And Forge of Wills is one of like the best, if not like the best card in any version of Warlock. It doesn't even matter if it's Wheellock or not. Just Forge of Wills is like the absolute best card. Because that rush is just so important. It gets you huge stats and it's rush, so it impacts the board immediately. And, you know, with the big stats like the 15-15, if you can get that, I mean, even like a 6/12, if you pick up, you know, Sargeras off of Loken or something, then cool. Like, you know, you're pretty happy with that. It's still pretty difficult for a lot of the decks in the meta to deal with. So, yeah, I would say just, you know, a little bit of like removal and going for a medium to largish body and then getting copies of that body with Forge of Wills can just win you a lot of games.
Exactly. So a few small tips I picked up along the way after I played, however many games I told you I played before. Plague Lock is an interesting matchup. You're favored, but you have to remember that after a lot of times, if they're smart, they wait and hold Helia. And they'll play it after you wheel. And then that puts in these plagues in your deck. You don't have any cards left. You might shuffle some in. But you also have to remember that even if they played Helia ahead of time, the effect is still in play. So if they down with the ship you or something and they put plagues in your deck, those plagues get reshuffled back into your deck. So if you're going to wheel against a plague DK, you have to understand where they are with the plagues they've cast, they're plague generators, and you also have to understand what you have in your hand. And sometimes it's, you know, if I'm going to wheel, I almost never wheel against a demon hunter, Death Knight, unless I have at least Symphony of Sins in hand, because I need to shuffle some cards in to at least give myself a chance not to just draw plagues. Having the weapon down will absorb some damage. So if you have the weapon down, so if you play wheel and then you play the weapon, or you have the weapon already equipped, the next three plagues, if you don't tap, which why would you tap at that point? The damage will get absorbed because you have that. So that is really important. One other thing too with the weapon is if you have to play Symphony of Sin and you get this do 6 damage to all characters, you're healing yourself for 2. So keep that in mind as well, because if you are below 6 if you're below 6 health, usually I can't play this, I'll die. But in that case, no, you still can play it. So just remember that. Those are the things that aren't necessarily intuitive that you forget about, but we just usually think about the weapon as for the fatigue counters or taps, but it can have a little other uses too. Ideally in that matchup, you really just want to play the taunts. You want to play big minions. You want to kind of be the beatdown. You also have to remember, though, when you play big minions, they're going to play Reska. They're going to clear your board. They're going to take your big minions. They're going to play Azurite Rat. They're going to do it again. So if you play your cards, you play your 15th, you're just stalling in those turns after you play wheel. If you're playing wheel, and if you're not playing wheel, you just have to be able to, if you play something and you know they've excavated 3 or 4 times or whatnot, or if a lot of minions have died and they haven't played Reska, they're going to take your minion. It's going to happen. So you want to bait that out, and you want to be ready to handle whatever you played, because that's going to be coming back at you in a turn or two if you don't. Shaman and Painlock, you are highly in favor. So kind of accept the fact that you probably lost that game. What you want to do there is you want to get stuff on the board and hit them. Don't hold stuff for value. Your best chance is to beat them down as fast as possible, because like with Shaman, it doesn't matter how hard you heal. You are just going to go over the top for 30 and they're just going to kill you. With Painlock, they're helping you at the beginning of the game because they're doing damage to themselves. So you want to keep in mind, you want to get damage in if you can. You want to save, you want to try to be aggressive with your clears, but remember, they're going to get their giants down really, really quickly. They're going to get their, you know, it's not uncommon for like turn 5, they play giant, 5/5, 5/5, and, you know, maybe even a couple other things, because that's how that deck works. So it's not favored, but if you can handle those turns, they don't really have any direct damage. So you can get their boards clear. You can use your location to kind of stabilize yourself. You can be stuck at 2 mana and they just, you know, can't get through your big taunts at that point. So that's really your best option there, is to just, you know, stall them out and try to keep them cleared, because they're favored. So really quick to kind of go over this TLDR section I put in, versus control, plan a wheel, control the game until that point, and make sure you have the tools you need after wheel is already in hand. Understand each deck's game plan and be ready to handle that for 4 turns after you wheel. Versus aggro, you want to keep the board clear until they run out of stuff, so prioritize removal, and don't worry about getting full value out of your value cards. I think it's a fun deck. Like I said, it has different game plans. There's a lot of decisions to be made. It's not Curvestone. So it's a really good deck, I think, to learn, to kind of help understand how game plans can change depending on the matchup knowledge you have. Any final thoughts on that before we move on to the main topic?
No, sir.
All right.
Yep.
Our main topic today is randomness and how to use that and control that in math. So, Dragon Rider, why don't you take it away?
All right. Yes. I wanted to talk about math and odds and probability. That's right. Pretty much going back to school. I know. Sounds boring. But actually, while I was working on my notes, I realized just how much math there is involved in Hearthstone. And I was like, oh my gosh, no wonder my brain gets really tired after like doing so many games, because seriously, I have like more than a page at 11 font.
Hey, that's a lot, Dawn.
And it's just like bullet pointed. So, yeah. There's a lot.
Is this your college lecture on card game randomness 101?
Yes.
Or is this like a 300 level?
Well, I mean, we're in the intermediate, so like I'm not going to dive too deep into these things, but I want to talk about at least all the different types of math that there is, and that like I definitely could, we could have a very long discussion diving really deep into this stuff. And I know some people are going to be like, oh, it's just Hearthstone, it's easy, like just add the numbers and then, you know, whatever. But there's actually a lot of math. There really is. So I'm going to read like just my bullet points here on some math that you will do during a typical game of Hearthstone. You might do math for lethal. Maybe it's your own. Maybe it's your opponent's. And a lot of these are probably going to be for you and or your opponent. So, yeah, you're going to be calculating lethal. You might have to calculate fatigue damage. You're going to have to look at mana, how much mana you're able to spend, hand space, board space. And that's especially important if you're looking at like certain placements on the board that could impact buffs, like Dire Alpha Wolf, you know, or like in Paladin, the deputization aura, like where those minions are, like that can affect the math that you're doing for damage or healing or whatever it is.
No, that card won't affect anything anymore. It's a dead card.
Dead card, okay.
Christ, the Paladin main.
Well, there's other buffs. There's other auras, even in Paladin, that can add stats when you're attacking, so that can make a difference for, like, trades, or if you're going for lethal damage, as I mentioned, lethal math. A couple of the cards that even Tito was talking about in the previous segment, removal cards. Ever heard the phrase defile math? Yep, that's a thing. Defile math. Threads of Despair, kind of very similar.
No. Threads of Despair is like, let's take Defile and take the math out of it.
Kind of, yeah. But it is still easy to mess up. And I have faced opponents even earlier today who did not properly do Threads of Despair math. And I still had minions on board, and then I got to kill them. So
nice.
And it's still something you have to think about.
With the wheel lock specifically, the math can get really interesting with mana, because you have to remember that you have a couple different cards that their costs change depending on your hand size. So you can calculate.
Now you're just getting ahead in the bullet points.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I know. See, this is what I'm saying. Like, there's actually so much math. So like removal, then there's the extra costs. So if you get hit with like a frost plague, right? Now your next thing costs more. Okay. Freezing trap, right? Then that minion costs more. In shaman, maybe you're overloaded. So it's like an extra cost that you're paying into future turns. Then here's like a huge segment of my notes. Discounts, because who needs to pay things for their cards? That's very like, sarcastic.
So, okay, but speaking of Hearthstone discounts,
yes,
the OG Hearthstone discounter, I think, needs to be reprinted. Emperor Thorasan.
Oh my gosh, no.
Do you remember that? Every turn?
Yes.
End of every turn, we don't
need that. No.
No, but you, what? Do. Doc, you have no. that.
Not in the same way. Not in the same way. But he, of all, like, basically almost every single iconic Hearthstone card has been reprinted at this point, especially with this expansion. So, like, why not the Emperor?
They give
why
to us.
Some
we have him.
Cheeky discount stuff.
He's in Hearthstone Brew.
Oh, sure. That doesn't count.
That's, yeah.
That doesn't count.
That's getting into the probability thing. If you really want to put Hearth in your deck and then see if you can, the probability of getting that hand specifically, we could talk about that. But no, here's what I have just for discounts specifically. So these are things that you might have to calculate what you're going to get on discounts. And there's also different like ways this is implemented. So it could be like the next spell you play. And that could be the next spell you play this turn. Could be the next card you play this turn is discounted. You know, it could be just something this turn. It could be a permanent discount, right? It could be this game, it like Reska that Tito brought up earlier as well, right? Reska gets discounted based on minions that have died this game. So there's different like implementations of this discounts. But I kind of broke this down into different categories of how things get discounted. So things might get discounted based on minions on board, like one of the Ziliax Deluxe 3000s, right? The more minions on board, the cheaper it gets. Or Sea Giants, same thing. Prismatic Beam, for how many enemy minions there are, gets discounted based on that. You might have a discount based on cards in hand, like the Table Flip that also was discussed in the previous segment. Dark Alley Pact that we also just discussed. The Mountain Giants, right? They're not really seeing play right now, but that is still a card that will be discounted based on the amount of cards in your hand. Then there's also some other circumstances that can discount things. And I didn't know how to exactly segment this, but there also are a lot of other effects that can be impacted by a lot of these things, like damage done or minion stats that you're going to gain that you might have to calculate for, but those aren't discounts. But I kind of wanted to just say that with this, because then here's all the here's all the bullets within this. Damage taken, like Mountain Giant, right? Mountain Giant, you're going to get a discount based on how much damage your hero has subtracted from it at that current time. There's cards that will discount something else, like Shadow Step or Prep, like Lunar Eclipse. We've seen hero power discounts, like Raza the Chained, that created that incredibly powerful priestess. Yeah. Yeah, like Machine Gun Priest. I'm not a fan of that name necessarily, but and then like Tour Guide. Now, obviously, it's not in standard currently after the rotation, but it was very popular like all last year and stuff. But when it was in standard, discounting your hero power. There's minion types that can have discounts. So, like your next mech costs one less, or like discount all the mechs in your hand by one. Discount the elementals in your hand by one, we've seen. There's like beast discounts, things like that. Then there's discounts that can happen based on how many cards you've played in a turn or just playing something in a turn. So like combo cards, you have to calculate for playing a card first to be able to then play your combo card. So that can impact what you're doing. We're seeing it a lot more, temporary copies of cards. So all the things like, Garrosh's Gift, or all these like gift cards that we have in a lot of the classes right now, or even some of the cards that kind of came out recently, they're like, put a couple temporary frost spells in your hand. Those are temporary copies that you kind of have to calculate for, that they're only going to be in your hand for that turn. So you have to account for that.
Projections is like huge right now, yeah.
Yeah. Things like Nature Shaman really capitalizes this, right? Like playing a bunch of nature spells in a single turn to then discount Crash of Thunder to play that for free. So there's discounts based on like a specific spell school type. There's discounts based on like the number of minions that you've played, or like specific minions that you've played. I have Azurite Giant as an example. So it's like each turn in a row that you've played an elemental, it will get discounted. And we've seen some of these like come and go depending on, how long you may have been playing Hearthstone or what might come in the future. And then the last thing I have here is there's also things that might get discounted or, again, have another effect, like increased damage or like added minion stats or something, like weapon stats we've seen for the cards drawn in a turn. So like currently there's kind of that, I think people are calling it like Miracle Rogue or Shuffle Rogue. You might have heard it referred to as that, has like the Playhouse Giants and Everything Must Go, that eight mana that like summons a couple 4/4 minions or four cost minions. So those cards get discounted, but then you have to kind of calculate for how many cards am I drawing? Will I be able to draw enough cards to then have it discounted enough to still play it this turn? Do I need to wait? So all of those things are things that you possibly could be like kind of doing the math on or kind of calculating for in a game or in a single turn. That's a lot. A lot of math and things that you have to kind of account for and calculate for.
Yeah, I don't think Nature Shaman does.
At least one thing.
I don't think Nature Shaman does. I think they just play cards until you're dead. But well, I think one good
example... I mean, sometimes, yeah.
They just say, I think I have enough, let's go. I think a good example, a really solid example of everything you're saying was the finals, the final game, where the winner of the Master's Tour, he got frozen. He played Reno. He had already played Odin, and he mathed his way to 32 damage, I believe, on that final turn to win the Master's Tour. And it was beautiful because he had to remember, not first he had to play his 1/3s that gave you armor. Then he had to play the goggles, and then he had also previously played a Verse Rift, or of course whatever it is, whatever rift it is that gives you +2/+2. And that was math that he had already worked out and just waiting for his turn. He had to order it. That is a very specific order he had to do. You had to finale the rift, you had to do everything, and it just worked out well. So, I think that's a pretty good example of where math is really important.
Yeah. I mean, I think any of it, maybe like fatigue damage, you're not going to see in every single game. You know, there's some games where it might get to fatigue, but especially a lot of the like aggressive matchups, or if it's like an aggressive kind of mirror match, you're not going to be hitting fatigue, but you're still going to have to calculate board space and how much damage your opponent can be doing, how much you can be doing. I think especially right now with those like wide board decks, like Priest especially, you know, you really have to be thinking about like the Ziliacs, how many minions are on board for Ziliacs to come down for free, and you know, accounting for if you can play that, and then can you fit in other things. I also just thought of another thing that you also have to account for, that sometimes you have to do math on, is if you want to play finale cards. Yeah. You have to calculate like, okay, am I going to squeeze in a hero power because my mana is awkward this turn, or do I need to like play some cheap minion even though I might want it later, but I just have to play it so that I use that last mana so I can actually play power cord synchronize for the finale effect and get the buff on my minion that I want. So there's definitely a lot of things like that you do have to calculate for, which, yeah, again, like I said, I feel like at this point for like myself, I have played for so long, and a lot of this to me now is kind of automatic. A lot of this I've kind of just built up the habits. I'm kind of already doing the lethal math, or I'm kind of already accounting for board space or hand space. But especially if you're learning or like learning new decks, like I would say the hand space thing, when you're learning Wheel Lock, If you don't like watch that carefully when you're learning that deck, it's pretty easy to be like, oh yeah, I could draw a card. And then you're like, and I just burned a card because my hand was full. Whoops. Didn't pay attention to that. So that is definitely something you can do with the like Pain Lock or Custom Warlock. I think I've heard a lot of pros say we were using that for the broadcast. I like that name.
Pretty good.
Yeah. It's really easy to get yourself way too low in health, and then your opponent can just like play Leroy and kill you. And you're like, oh, that was a mistake. So there's definitely a lot of things that you have to account for with that. If you're going to watch some of the games from this Masters Tour, like if, especially if you're trying to learn some of these decks, the math that you see a lot of players, those players do with Priest, with the Zarimi Priest, when they are going specifically, I would say, in on their like Zarimi turn where they're going to take two turns in a row, watch those turns very carefully and see what they're doing, because sometimes they will play a minion that you're like, oh, I just thought that they were going to, you know, like play these 2-1 cost minions or something, and they don't. And it's because they're calculating for a very specific like Zarimi into having board space potentially for a Ziliax, and then copying their Ziliax and then getting another Ziliax out on board. If you're going to play the Celestial 3-2 guy that gives you a temporary copy, which I mentioned earlier, the temporary copies, right? If you're going to give yourself a temporary copy of something like Ziliax, you need to have that extra board space. So those are things like you always have to be calculating for. And some of this is a lot easier to build up the habits and just kind of do automatically and like save yourself a little bit of that, like consciously, okay, I got to calculate for this. Okay, I got to calculate for that. And I think that I will do another segment that actually dives a little bit more into ways that you can set yourself up to have kind of those more automatic things. And I'll give one example of that right now, just because I feel like we talked about it a lot, is like the giant, specifically the mountain giant that we're seeing, or the, yeah, mountain giant, right? It's
the hand size one.
No, damage.
I just noticed I wrote it twice. I wrote mountain giant twice in two different spots. So my notes are wrong. Ugh, terrible.
You're fired.
The molten giant, not mountain giant, molten giant, the one that gets discount based on how much damage you've taken. An easy way to remember this, how much it will cost, is it starts at 20, right? So if you start at 30 health, okay, you've taken 10 and you are at 20, it will be discounted by 10. So it will now cost 10. I know that's a lot. If you are at 10 health, it will be free. So the point is to kind of think about your health between 10 and 20. If you have 12, you're just going to look at the second number. So the 2. Your molten giant costs 2. If you're at 15 life, your molten giant will cost 5. If you're at 17, it'll cost 7. 10 or less, it's free, right? If you are at 20 or above, it costs 10 or more. So that's kind of like an easy way to remember that. So you don't have to sit there and think, okay, how much damage do I have to take to discount this? And you don't have to sit there and try to like, okay, I'm just gonna tap and like play this other minion and then see what it costs. You can kind of calculate and say, okay, if I play this and I take 3 damage, I'm going to be at 15, it's going to cost 5. And you kind of know, and it helps you with that part of the math and calculation a little bit faster. So you might have time for other decisions, like if you need to make trades or go face, or if you need to draw and then see what you get, like you're giving yourself more time for those decisions. So again, like I said, I kind of want to do a whole segment on like some different things that you can do like that to make some of these things a little bit more automatic, a little bit more easy to remember, or like faster, so that you don't spend half your turn just thinking about how much am I going to be doing to myself to discount Molten Giant, or how much am I going to be doing to like discount this other card that I need, or calculating for those things. So you can do it quite a bit faster with some other shortcuts.
I will say one thing I know I definitely don't do is count lethal enough. How often do you kind of go into your next turn and you're like, all right, I got to deal with this threat, this threat, this threat, and I'm going to do this and do that. And then you go, wait a second, 7, 9, 15, I have lethal. And you just hit him in the face. And I think another good example where the math really comes speaking, we'll bring it back to Wheel Lock since we were talking about it. I've had times where I've had Fan Totem in hand and I could play him maybe for like 5, and then I cast Symphony of Sins. And then I should have played Phantotem first, because now he costs more because there are more cards in my deck. And I forget about that. So it's things like that. There is a lot of math here.
Yeah. Yep. And then even with things like that, sometimes these I'm not going to dive super into, but I did want to bring them up, is like some probability type thing. Odds, probability. Mulligans, I think, are one of the biggest where you're going to see this. And if you've ever heard streamers or even like casters talking about, or on podcasts, right, things like, oh, you need to mulligan hard for X card. This is what people are talking about. They're talking about the probability of you getting a certain card. So you are getting rid of more cards from your starting hand because it gives you the higher odd, the higher probability that you will find the card that you're looking for. So I feel like probability is especially important in mulligans. I definitely want to dive deeper into that in another future segment. So if anyone's interested in mulligans, that's another one of my future topic ideas. When you're looking at draws, right? Like, let's say you need to get to Symphony of Sins or you need to find Leroy. If I just tap into Leroy, then I can play it and kill them. What's the probability? Leroy's a legend. There is only one card. Because it's a legend, you can only have one copy. How many cards do you have? So what are the odds? What's the probability that you're going to find exactly that card? Is it worth it to do that? Or do you need to do something else? I'm bringing all of this up for the draws because I showed this to these guys before. There is a calculator that I found that is great. It is cardgamecalculator.com/Hearthstone. Or you can just go cardgamecalculator.com and they have a little thing at the bottom to select either Hearthstone, Magic the Gathering, or Marvel Snap. And it will automatically change like the deck size and stuff for you. But you can put in, let's say you start with 30 cards. The deck success count, there's draw count, and then desired success. So the example I'm going to use for this way you can calculate this is, it's been nerfed, but before, when we had the Demon Hunter, you were really looking for either the weapon or the instrument tech to draw the weapon, right? So those were like four of your 30 cards that you were really looking to find. So in this calculator, you could put, you start with 30 cards, you are looking for deck success count four. You only need one success, let's say, one of those four. One instrument tech, one weapon, that's fine. And then you can put in how many draws. Maybe you have, maybe you're growing first. So if you mulligan all three of your cards, that's three draws. You have a 35.96% chance to get one of those cards in your mulligan.
No. This is wrong because they always had either tech or umpire. So can explain that well, to me at 35%.
So that is just if you are going first and you don't have it in your first three and you mulligan all three of those because you're getting three new cards. So the chance of finding one of those four cards. But here's the thing is that instrument tech costs two. The weapon costed three. So you also have your first turn draw, potentially your second turn draw, and potentially even your turn three draw. So the odds then increase that much more that you are going to find one of those cards to play. And that's why it always felt like they had that, because the odds are so high. If you are looking at, hey, I need to have, I have 18 cards left and I need to find Reno. Exactly Reno, and that's it. It's a 1 in 18, right? The odds are much, much lower. So I think this is really important if you are really looking to kind of capitalize on some of those, very specific cases, but I just found this calculator, and if people want to try it and you just want to like mess around with it and see, you know, some different stats on that. Again, I think mulligans are where that is incredibly important. But knowing the probability of even like discovers is also very important. I think I brought this up in casting at one point for a shaman. Currently in standard, there's 16 nature spells. You cannot discover a card off of itself. So if someone was like specifically finding a nature spell off of a card that gave you a discover choice for nature spells, it's only 15 possible cards. So then that kind of, you know, three of the 15. So you can kind of decide from there, like what the odds are. If you're looking at damage, like let's say, let me pull up that wheel lock, because I think there was a really good example from that deck as well. Mortal Eradication, that 3-mana one that deals 5 damage split between minions, and you get to heal 2 for each minion that you kill. It's another one where you kind of have to, like, what are the odds if I play this that minions die? Are you, you know, making sure that there's only 5 health between 2 or 3 minions on the board? They only each have a couple health, and it's, like, guaranteed to kill them. That's higher odds that you actually kill them and you're going to get the healing. If there's multiple things on board and they have, you know, multiple spread out health, maybe the odds are lower that you're actually going to kill multiple. It's a higher chance maybe that you'll kill one, but you kind of have to weigh those, like the odds and probability on that when you're looking at that in some cases.
That's not just that. It's also, you might want to set that up. So you may have to make a less than optimal play in order to make that optimal play. Yeah. So you might say, well, I can drain soul one of these guys here to get it down to 2 to then make sure that my mortal eradication kills 4 of them, thus getting me 8 health. So like that math right there is kind of important. And the thing you were talking about too, as far as like digging for a card, like especially with like Warlock, I think is a very solid example, because you always have that tap hero power that, so many times you come and you look at your hand, you're like, I could play this. I have a 1 in 5 chance of drawing that. Is it worth me tap? Because if I tap and I do that, then I can't do plan A. So is plan B better than plan A? And sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. It's like you take a chance. So it does come up quite a bit.
Yep. Yeah. And another thing with like drawing, I think we've even talked about it in some of our past, you know, segments, is like, what are you trying to draw for? And that's why I bring up that, you know, probability calculator too, because sometimes it's like, oh yeah, I heard that like you should just start with a draw and see what you get. But like, if you don't know what you're drawing for, you probably shouldn't just be like saying, oh, I should just draw because that's what I heard a streamer, or I heard somebody on a podcast like say to just draw first. Like, no, you have to be like, you got to know what you're trying to draw. So that's kind of where, again, those like that probability of, okay, how many cards do you have left in your deck? What are you trying to draw? Are you trying to draw one specific legendary? Maybe that's not the play then. You know, are you trying to draw a weapon or a weapon, you know, instrument tech or this, and that increases the odds that you're actually going to find one of those things? Then maybe that is the play. So this is why I feel like actually talking about like the math and the probability of things is so important, because it really is something that we use so much in Hearthstone.
So what you're saying really is you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. You got to know when to walk away, and you got to know when to run.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. And you got to know the probability of all your opponent's stuff, right? Like the farther in the deck they are, the more odds that they have to have Odin, or the higher their chances are that they have their Sif and their, you know, spells, or that shaman. Yep, they probably have their nature stuff, and they're gonna go in next turn for a bunch of damage because you just saw them play, you know, one specific card. And so if they're going in on it now, then probably, yeah, the odds are that they have the setup in their hand.
And that's something that, so I made the joke before about Demon Hunter always having umpires and then, or weapon tech or whatever. But a lot of times you think in a matchup that they're just going to have that card or whatever that card might be that is going to be problematic for you. So a lot of times we hold off, maybe you say, well, they're going to have this, so I'm not going to play that. And you have to understand that you have to make them have it. And depending on how far along the game is, if they have 17 cards left in their deck and you're worried about trial by fire, if they haven't played the elemental, they might not have it. They might not have it, but like it's more unlikely that they don't. So because that's not a card they would mulligan for the most part, right? So you have to kind of put all this together in your brain and say, okay, what are the chances they have it? Is it better for me to risk them having it now? Or if I don't do what I'm going to do, I'm just letting them make their odds better to draw it after, because now they are that much closer to a smaller deck.
Yeah.
I
think another example of that is when you see people who are playing like aggressive decks or whiteboard decks, they'll kind of pressure as much as they can a little bit and like kind of like, okay, how many more minions can I add to the board before my opponent uses their removal? And then when you see the removal, then it's like, okay, refill now, especially as it is earlier and earlier in the game, kind of again, force them to have that removal, like against Warlock. Hey, it's turn three, they just used Immortal or Mortal Eradication. Can now on turn four, can they have the second one? Odds are probably low because you already saw one that they actually have that second one. Now, depending on what version they're playing, however many like removals they include, that, you know, the odds change then, which is why I think it's also really interesting to talk about like tech inclusions, that kind of stuff for tournaments. But again, that's like it's a whole other thing, but I don't know. That's why I just felt like this topic was so important, because as I was going through this, like the more and more things, it's like there actually is so much involved in this, in just like a typical game, every single game.
I'll give you two more, I think, that are interesting. If you keep track of their hands and you know their decks, and you know the key cards in their decks, maybe there's five key cards in their decks, and they've kept two cards and they haven't played those two cards. Maybe one of them Sif, maybe one of them Zat. Like, you know the cards that they need to have and want to have. So using what we've talked about this in the past, but using the math of, hey, I know they specifically need these cards. They didn't mulligan a couple of these cards. It's a good chance that they have this card. So that kind of also plays into your calculus as well. And the other thing is, this is some people agree with this, disagree with this, but there's the concept of thinning your deck. Whereas if you are playing, say, for example, playing a Flood Paladin and you play Boogie Down, you have now just finaled Boogie Down. You have now just played 3 1 mana cards out of your deck. So now your deck is 3 cards thinner. And you are also unlikely to draw a 1-mana minion, which is not going to be as valuable later on as it would be as you draw it from the beginning of the game, where you can play it and it actually is going to impact the board a lot more. So I think there's even more math that we can get into.
Yeah. And the first point that you touched on is another one of my future topics, which is hand reading. So there you go. There, you all got insights into multiple future segments that I already have planned.
Love it. Love it. So is there anything else we want to talk about on the math before we kind of bring this show to a conclusion? No? Doc?
It's math. 29 for sure.
It is 29 for sure. And I don't know about you, Doc. So just so you guys know, I think I talked about this before. I graduated and I thought I could finish my minor when I was done, but you can't finish your minor if you've already graduated. And I was 3 classes off of a math minor. And I was so mad when I found that out. I'm like, I'll just take a couple more classes. They're like, nope, you can't do it. You've already graduated. And that was a bummer. But talking about this much math, it makes me really full, but I think I have room for dessert. What do you think, Doc?
Yeah, dessert sounds great, my man. So Dawn, what is your favorite non-Hearthstone card game?
That is such a good question. And honestly, the answer has probably changed over time. Oh my gosh. And my German Shepherd, he's pitching in there. So in the past, I probably would have said maybe just like Magic or something, because I didn't really know like what that was. If you're talking like board game included card games, we'll say any of like the Clank games, the Clank, like there, it's like a roguelike deck building.
That's fun.
I love the Clank games. I love those so much. And also My husband and his dad always give me so much grief because I am like the greediest player when we play those games. I'm like, no, I'm going to run around this dungeon and like collect as much loot and get as much gold and stuff as I can before I try to escape. And then I always die like right outside the exit. yeah. And they're like, well, you shouldn't have been so greedy. And I'm like, well, I can't help it. like in Hearthstone, I'm like, yeah, I'll just like throw my cards out there. That's fine. I don't need to be greedy. And then in that game, I'm like, oh, the greed. I think currently, though, my favorite non-Hearthstone card game is Star Wars Unlimited. I have really, really been enjoying Star Wars Unlimited. Doc's cheering again.
I played this game a while ago when I was playing Magic at a local card shop, and I don't remember what the name of it is, but I wanted to play it again. It was like playing a fighter game. It was like playing like Street Fighter or something like that, but it was a card game, and you had to like draw cards, and you played combo cards and all that, and it was really fun, but I can't remember the name of it.
I played one that Edelweiss brought to BlizzCon. That was super fun. Some of the characters you can play super complicated. So Don, who is your favorite hero and what is your favorite location or base in Star Wars?
Zach is getting a little choppy there. No, you're good. So for Star Wars Unlimited, right now, I mean, it feels cheap to say Boba, but like I gotta say Boba. Boba Fett's probably my favorite leader. Also just because the very first pre-release event that I did, I played a Boba Fett deck, and that was just so much fun. He's an awesome leader, so it's like a special place in my heart as like my first like official leader that I got to play in an event. I don't know what my favorite base is. I mean, probably one of the epic ones just for like their utility and how good they are. But if I had to pick just like a common base, I guess we're just going to say Dagobah Swamp, also because I've opened like a bajillion of them. So. And it's classic, right? Like, yep. You can't argue with Dagobah Swamp. So, yep, there you go.
Nice. Thank you. So, listeners, if you would be so inclined, please leave us a review. We prefer 5-star reviews because it helps with visibility, but rate us whatever you believe that we deserve. Let us know any kind of criticism, good, bad, the ugly, because we want to make this show the best that it can be for us and the best that it can be for you. If you leave us a review, we'll read it out on the show. If you email us, we'll also read that out on the show. Dawn, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at DawnieDK. That's DawnieDK. You can find me both on Twitch and YouTube, DragonWriterTCCG. Which I definitely recommend. Also, if you want to catch me talking about all those different card games, including Star Wars Unlimited, with Ron Mexico and Dangus Dad. They are also amazing at card games. So we do that on my YouTube and Twitch live, generally every Friday, and then goes out to audio once I get that caught up. yeah, that's way behind. And then if you would like to hear me talking even more about Standard Hearthstone specifically, you can also catch me on the Dr. 3HS podcast.
How about yourself, Doc?
Wonderful. Yeah, you can find me primarily on Twitter. You can seldomly find me on Blue Sky. And hopefully soon you can find me on twitch.tv/DocMcButt once again. Tito, how about yourself?
Okay, a couple things real first. I've seen Doc's cat walk behind him from right to left, but not left to right. So I'm wondering if there's a glitch in his matrix.
He's a displacer kitten.
Fair enough. You can find me at Tito Santana HS on Twitter and Twitch. I know I said I had two things, but I forgot what the other one was. So Dawn, do you have any shout outs this week?
Well, you know, The as always, have to shout out you guys. Thank you again for having me on and letting me ramble about just the most like ridiculous, obscure things, because this is so fun. And like, who would have thought? Be like, what are you spending your Sunday night doing? talking about math and cards, like, and I love it because I'm a nerd. So thank you as always for having me on to talk about these things. And, you know, I am also going to shout out specifically Ty, which I apologize. I'm not saying your whole screen name, Ty, but he is a member of the blind community that has kind of recently found Hearthstone. And I think he said he's been playing since January, doing very well, like incredibly well, I will say. I wish I was that good that fast. but he has been just like absolutely complimenting my casting and stuff, and really was appreciative of the way that I cast as well, because I really tried to specify a lot of things. Some people might consider it like play-by-play casting, you know, or I would specifically say a card that got burned. Right. You know, sometimes you might just hear the casters react to things that got burned or cards that got drawn. But for the blind community, or for anybody who might be like, you know, doing an errand or a chore or taking care of their kids or something, and they're just trying to listen, or they're like listening to the stream while they're doing work or playing, you know, playing their own game at the same time, you know, it's incredibly helpful for those people to be able to like actually hear, oh, that was the card that was burned, or like, oh, that's the card that was just drawn that's like so impactful. And especially for like the blind community, that they don't get that. And if there's also sound issues like we did have for some of the broadcast this Master's Tour, they have no idea what's going on unless the casters actually specifically say and call it out. So just huge shout out to him and a lot of other players that were really appreciative of that way that I casted, so that they really felt included and actually could feel like they could actually follow along and know what was happening in the matches.
Okay, Ty is not that good. He lost to Pilot in 5 games this week. No, he's been playing. Oh. I'm kidding.
Jeez.
I'm kidding. He's, yikes. The games were really, really good. He played really well. Oh. But let me put this in perspective. Ty is playing in Pro League after starting in January or December or whatever it was. And Pro League has...
That's...
Pro League has people like me, but it also has people that actually play Hearthstone really well, like McBannerface, I believe, is there. Maybe he's not there anymore, but like you got
and world champion Pocket Train,
yep. Ron Mexico,
Luna was there too for a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
Our guest next week, Itachi. Ooh.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
I'm so sad.
Itachi's amazing. Oh no,
I'm
Doc's
so
missing
sad
it.
I miss Itachi.
No. Oh no.
So I like two,
because when he played DreamHack, I forget which DreamHack it was, but when he spiked the DreamHack, I had only known him through THL. But like it was just fun to watch him spike a DreamHack.
Oh my gosh. The people that have listened this far, by the way, you were just getting like all of the extra insight, by the way. Yeah. That was, I could tell you which one that wait, was that. That was, he got top 4, I believe. That was DreamHack Anaheim, February 2020.
Wow.
That was right before the pandemic hit. I was there. That was great. He beat Muzzy in the top 8, I believe, to get top 4. And it was, you know, man, I was like losing my mind.
Muzzy, now that is a name I have not heard in a long time.
Molstar, nice, by the way, people who just watched the recent Masters Tour, Molstar was there as well.
Yes.
In the top 8 too. He did really well. That was a great event.
So, sorry, really quick. So I guess my shout out's going to be my fellow Swagoi teammate Molstar for making top 8 in the Masters Tour. Yeah, he didn't get as far as we wanted to, but like still played very well, brought a very unique lineup, which did really, really well in groups. And he flashed the Swagoi jersey after he made it out of groups, which that was really fun. So shout out to Molstar.
And I'm going to shout out two different things. I'm going to shout out for the second week in a row, Ridiculous Hat, who caught strays this week because of the quest change. And he as a community manager was amazing, and he just handled the situation as well as possible. He took feedback. He brought it back to the people. He did his job. He's great at his job. And if anyone's given him attitude, you should stop. Because he is going to listen, just be respectful, and he is going to cure you, and he is going to take what you give him, and he's going to bring it back to the Hearthstone team and factor that in. So shout out to Hat, who just did an amazing job this week. And we're also going to shout out Born to be Wild, who are about to have their 200th episode on Friday. And that's huge. That's huge. That's a lot of time talking about Hearthstone. So congrats to them. Isheep, you know, constant host of the show. He pops in here and there. So we appreciate it. But anyway, guys, I think we're toast. I think we'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Slide two brothers meet one another when they slide up to the mic. It's bread and butter with one another. Let's start up that recording light.